This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. We've been hearing a lot about anarchists lately, especially from the president. Trump uses the A word pretty frequently when describing the recent protests for racial justice that have happened across America.
The American dream is the sacred birthright of every American child. That's what we have, is we have the American dream. And nobody's going to shatter the American dream, not the anarchists, not the agitators, not the fools.
They're not protesters. Those aren't protesters. Those are anarchists. They're agitators. They're rioters. They're looters.
We're telling right now these protesters, and many should be arrested, because these are professional agitators. These are professional anarchists. These are people that hate our country.
Last month, a White House memo deemed Seattle, New York, and Portland, quote, anarchist jurisdictions, and ordered a review of the federal funding for these cities. But what exactly does it mean to be an anarchist? And what would an anarchist jurisdiction even look like? To find out, we're bringing on Kim Kelly, a freelance journalist and labor organizer. Kim, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us is William C. Anderson. He's an activist, co-author of As Black as Resistance, and author of the upcoming book, Nation on Known Map. William, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Ruth Kenna, professor of political theory at Loughborough and the author of The Beginner's Guide to Anarchism and The Government of No One. Ruth, appreciate you coming on the show today.
Very happy to be here.
Now, Kim, you are a self-described anarchist. What is your response to the president's claims about anarchy?
I mean, my first impulse is to laugh. But then, you know, the fact that it is such a dangerous precedent to be setting, it kind of takes the impulse away real quick. Obviously, this man does not know much about anything, but he certainly does not know anything about anarchism or what it means to be an anarchist. He is using this word to describe anybody who disagrees with him or his regime. I mean, obviously, a lot of anarchists, all anarchists, I would venture to say, oppose what Trump and his white supremacist regime are doing, but not everybody who is, you know, anti-Trump or anti-fascist or anti, you know, neoliberal is an anarchist. It's an ideology. It's not just a tagline that you can slap on somebody who disagrees with you.
William, you also identify as an anarchist. What are your thoughts?
I mean, really, the president is drawing on a historical trope that anarchism is violent chaos. And that's really rooted in a particular part of history, based on this idea of like the bomb thrower and insurrectionary anarchism, particularly the Galleanist and folks who are operating around the early 1900s based on the propaganda of the deed. So he's using this historical idea of anarchists as like terrorists who want to cause chaos and who want to just assassinate people in power. He's drawing from that to try to, push forward an agenda. So, I mean, there's certainly history there that he's trying to tap into to make people fearful about anarchism and what it actually is. And so this idea that that wholly represents anarchism, that history that he's trying to draw from, that wholly represents anarchism is really either an ignorant, oftentimes from the public reading, or a willful misreading. And so anarchism is actually a highly organized idea that requires a lot of cooperation and planning, because it doesn't rely on forms of authoritarian and state violence to achieve its goals. And so I think that is really important to, you know, acknowledge what Kim just said, which is anybody who opposes Trump is capable of being labeled an anarchist. And that's what we are seeing with this labeling of anarchist jurisdictions.
Well, and Ruth, let's just start with some basics. What are the core beliefs of anarchy?
So for me, I think anarchism is about self-government, and it's about resisting the idea that you have to be necessarily commanded in order to bring about any kind of social order. So just to pick up on what was said just now, I mean, I think one of the key themes of anarchism is cooperation, and anarchists stress our natural sociability and our ability to make relationships by ourselves without somebody else having to mediate that for us and to invent rules that we have to follow. so that, that we can perform the most basic kinds of tasks. So, yeah, I think it's about self-government, cooperation and sociability. It doesn't mean to say that we all have to love each other, but it means that we are naturally sociable creatures and that we can organise our own affairs consensually.
Well, we got this email from Sager who says, I was first drawn to anarchism in the context of the U.S. anti-war movement in the early 2000s. I'm an anarchist because I believe we have the capacity and the responsibility to take care of each other without force, coercion or hierarchy. Kim, would you consider it a philosophy, a political identity, a social movement, or some combination of that?
I mean, in a way, it's all of the above, but fundamentally, it's a leftist political philosophy that obviously there is a social element, there's a community element to it, because people who practice and believe in anarchy tend to find one another and organize with one another. But yeah, it's a lot more than just a buzzword or a, you know, a sticker. It's a whole little world. It's a community of people who believe, I mean, exactly what William and Ruth were saying. And people that believe in these principles and who are actively trying to build a better world that reflects those principles while we're still dealing with being, you know, crushed under the boot of the state.
William, why do you think there is such a misunderstanding around what anarchy is, what the belief system is? Is it a branding issue?
I think that it has to do with the fact that there is a lot of historical repression of anarchists and anyone, for that matter, on the left that actually challenges the state. There are, you know, people all across all factions of the left who reject state violence and capitalism, and there has always been an effort to kind of squash and silence movements that actually reject the authority of the state. So I think that, you know, when you think about the history here of any sort of movements that actually were trying to challenge oppression and further the cause of liberation of oppressed people in the United States, there's always going to be a concerted effort to make sure that people have a negative association with those sorts of politics, and that people think that they're dangerous and risky and bad, and that those are actually harmful things when they're absolutely not. So it's actually, I think, a very purposeful thing that has happened because of, you know, political repression.
Ruth, can you give us some historical perspective? Where did the concept of anarchy come from?
So the term itself exists before anybody labels themselves in a positive sense as an anarchist. And the first person to embrace the label in that way, in that positive way, and to use it to describe a politics, is a French writer called Proudhon, Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, in 1840. And he has an incredible influence in France. And I suppose what happens in the next sort of 30 years or so is that anarchist ideas get taken up by a variety of individuals. And eventually it encourages a movement to generate or to mobilise around the ideas that Proudhon and others put out there, largely as a response, I suppose, to the disappointments of republican regimes, and also to differentiate anarchists as socialists from Marxists.
We also heard from a lot of you who identify as anarchists and why you do so.
Hi, this is Dan from Pittsburgh. I think, to put it as plainly as possible, anarchism is peace over war, cooperation over coercion, and a fight to end all forms of oppression in the world.
One of the things that have made me convert to an anarchist is seeing how much discretion there is in the administration of justice.
Capitalism is how they govern us, by the ability to get our needs met. Why can't we help each other to get our needs met instead of having things held over our head?
What made me an anarchist was my time with the Marine Corps, 5 years. I saw that we were subsidizing the mass murder of human beings to make others rich, much like Smedley Butler said.
I think that there are many problems in the world, and I don't think that simply making governments disappear overnight is the solution. But much like abolishing the police, if we start to invest our time and our resources into taking care of each other and to actually working through our conflicts instead of deferring them to an outside authority, then we start to truly know what it means to live in community with each other.
Thanks to Dan from Pittsburgh, Billy from Cleveland, Amanda from Washington, a listener from Cincinnati, and Jennifer from Austin for sending in those voicemails and sharing your thoughts. William, in your experience, how varied are people's ideas of anarchy?
I think that people oftentimes think that anarchism is one thing, and they particularly have one idea that's based on what's called classical anarchism, and that's European anarchism. It's really kind of the overarching idea in the popular imagination of what anarchism is, and I think that that's something that I try to challenge with my work, and based on the fact that, you know, a lot of people I encounter do have this one very specific, predominantly white idea of what anarchism is. They think it's a white ideology, and that there is no interpretation or understanding from Black people or participation from Black people or Indigenous people or any people of color. And I think that we have to push back against that notion. So I think that there is a little bit of limitation on the understanding of how diverse anarchism actually is. And, you know, anarchism is actually really just one way to describe the principles that really compromise the term.
Kim, how does one live an anarchist lifestyle? Is it possible to do it within our society?
I mean, of course, you just have to build the world that you're trying to see now. I mean, obviously, we're going to be dealing with this state violence, with repression, with, you know, the brutal hierarchy of capitalism and of our current neoliberal hellscape. But I mean, anarchism is such an individual sort of ideology that, you know, you can create what you want to see, whether it is through engaging in mutual aid and caring for your neighbors and your community, whether it's, you know, supporting people who are incarcerated when they come home and when they're in prison, whether it is making sure that, you know, your neighborhood food pantry has plenty of food, whether it is engaging in direct action to shut down or otherwise complicate the actions of the state, whether it is providing security for people who want to protest or march or who are just trying to get home. You know, as my other panelists were saying, anarchism is about taking care of one another. Anybody can be an anarchist. Anybody, honestly, I think that most people with a heart have plenty of anarchism in them already. David Graeber, who is a beloved thinker who we lost recently, has a really nice little article that you can find that's called "Are You an Anarchist? The Answer May Surprise You," that breaks it down in this way, where it's essentially, if you're trying to be a good person, if you feel like people can take care of one another and look out for one another without being told to do so, then you might just be an anarchist.
Well, here's a question from one of our listeners who left us this voicemail.
Hi, my name is Jerianne Cathy. I live here in San Diego, California. I wanted to ask an anarchist, what would you do as the next president?
William, first of all, would an anarchist run for government office?
No. I mean, it's actually funny. I actually do know someone that identifies as an anarchist, at least the last time I talked to them, who actually ran for, I think, a city council position some years ago and won. But for an anarchist to run for president it doesn't make any sense at all when you have an understanding of what anarchism means. And anarchism is actually a rejection of such hierarchy and positions that are charismatic and messianic forms of leadership. So no, I don't think that the question should be, you know, what would an anarchist leader do? Because an anarchist leader is like an oxymoron. I think the better question would be, what would organized masses of people do in a mutual effort and cooperative effort to make the world a better place? And that is, we engage in, you know, direct democracy. We then engage in unions and federations to build institutions that actually serve people and meet people's needs and provide resources. That's something the state is failing to do, as we can see around us every day, and with the response to COVID, among other things. It's something that we can do ourselves, that we don't need, you know, leaders to do. We are people who want to survive and want to have peace and safety. And we have that ability when we organize ourselves.
Well, Terry writes on Facebook, anarchists are much closer to libertarians than to Democrats. And Jason wrote on Facebook, volunteerism is the better term. Think farmers markets, garage sales, lemonade stands, free market interactions. Democrats are the opposite of anarchists. They want government involvement everywhere. And Monty tweets, what distinguishes anarchism from libertarianism? Ruth, I'll come to you. We have about 30 seconds here.
It's a difficult question, because I think libertarianism means different things in America than it does in Europe. But broadly speaking, anarchists are anti-capitalists, whereas libertarians are not necessarily so. So I think I would put it as that, that they're supporters of liberty, but also people who fight against any kinds of forms of oppression, including market oppressions.
Kim, you have any thoughts there?
Oh, she nailed it.
All right. Well, we're discussing anarchy, what it is and what it isn't. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and from our guests in a moment.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. Google's free tools are designed to help millions of businesses around the country adapt to a new way of working. From updating their business hours, to switching to curbside pickup, to activating online booking, small businesses are staying connected to their customers with Google. They can even add gift card and donation links on Google so they can get support from their community. Explore Google's free tools for small businesses at google.com/grow.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
I'm Rodney Carmichael.
I'm Sydney Madden.
And on our new podcast, Louder Than a Riot, we trace the collision of rhyme and punishment in America.
We were hunted by police. We were literally physically hunted. You'd be standing on the corner, drug squad pull up, everybody will run.
New from NPR Music. Listen to Louder Than a Riot.
Now let's get back to our conversation about anarchy with Kim Kelly, a freelance journalist and labor organizer, William C. Anderson, he's an activist, co-author of As Black as Resistance, and author of the upcoming book Nation on No Map, and Ruth Kenna, professor of political theory at Loughborough University, and the author of The Beginner's Guide to Anarchism and the Government of No One. Well, a listener who signed their name as Comrade Liet emailed, I'm an anarchist because I am opposed to violence, but anarchists are not opposed to self-defense because under the strict definition of violence, self-defense is not violence. You know, William, we see anarchy often being equated with violence. If the goal of anarchy is to be stateless, are there any limitations on how anarchists reach that goal?
I mean, it depends on who you're talking to, honestly. I think that really right now, that in the current situation we're living in this country and in this society under white supremacy and capitalism, I think that we have to have a priority that is self-defense, because we are seeing increased state violence and repression. And so I think that a lot of people are trying to organize themselves and be prepared for anything in the face of this unfettered violence that we're seeing coming from the highest positions of government in this country. So I think when you really put the focus there, I think that people are much more thoughtful about being ready to defend themselves, not trying to exert any sort of forms of aggressive violence toward the state. Because really, you also have to consider that there's not much of a big, sizable left movement in the United States. There are pockets of people who identify with sets of politics like anarchism, and people are usually in the position of having to try to defend themselves more than anything.
Cindy emails, the definition of anarchy is a state of disorder due to absence or non-recognition of authority. We need government, albeit good government, to function civilly. And Ruth, we got this question. Do we have any examples of an anarchist society existing?
Yes, we do. And I think this sort of partly goes back to what was said earlier about the way in which anarchism is sometimes detached from the groups of people who organise themselves. So if you think of anarchism as a principle of self-organisation, then you can see that in everyday life all the time. You can see it in the COVID crisis. I mean, one of the things that's remarkable about the pandemic that we're all facing is the number of mutual aid societies that have mushroomed across America, across Europe and the UK as well. And these are expressions, if you like, of voluntary organisation, of anarchistic behaviour, whether or not people themselves think of them, you know, identify with anarchism. And then I think there are other very powerful examples of anarchist organising, notably in Spain between 1936 and 1939, where there was an anarchist revolution. And some people would also point to Rojava today, so in northern Syria, where Kurdish people are organising along anarchistic lines, democratically, and in order to defend not only their rights, but to organise peaceably with non-Kurdish peoples in that region.
Well, let's bring in another listener question. Here's Mary from Philadelphia.
What do you do about lack of order and lack of enforcement of law? What do you do about rapists? What do you do about burglars? What do you do about people who want to pick a fight with fists or guns or anything over any issue?
Kim, how does an anarchist society handle, for lack of a better phrase, law and order? Does it?
I mean, law and order as the concept currently exists, I don't think is something that we would, you know, be that concerned with in an anarchist society, given that right now is basically a dog whistle for the state is allowed to control you, beat you, maim you, or murder you. And honestly, we see these kind of questions in the same context as, you know, when the discussion of prison abolition comes up, or the abolition of police, where there's sort of this assumption that something is already being done about these problems. But as we all know, they're not. You know, what happens if someone is burgled or is injured now? You call the police, maybe they do something, maybe they hurt you, maybe they do nothing. It's not as if the system now actually works in a way that benefits anybody except, you know, the ruling class, the property owning class, and generally rich white people. So when it comes to the idea of law and order, that's, I don't even want to sort of bring that into an anarchist context, but when it comes to dealing with conflict and dealing with issues and dealing with harm, I mean, anarchist society would be focused on restorative justice, transformative justice, would deal with these issues in a way that acknowledges the humanity of the people involved, that understands the underlying root causes of these problems, and just understands that, you know, humans act certain ways because of the outside pressures that are placed on them by capitalism, by white supremacy, by other forms of oppression. I mean, in an anarchist society, a lot of the issues we're seeing now simply would not exist because we wouldn't have those pressures. So it's, you know, there are a lot of schools of thought on this particular matter, but law and order as it is seen in 2020 in Trump's America is not really it'd be kind of a non-starter, I would say.
William, you write about the anarchism of blackness. Explain what that means.
So the anarchism of blackness is an essay I wrote with Zoe Samudzi in 2017. And, you know, it was kind of the product of some years of dialogue between us about blackness and anarchism. And so there's a few different points that come out of that essay. The first point is addressing the failures of liberalism. And so, you know, this isn't a new revelation. Many people throughout Black history have addressed it. The Democratic Party and white liberals particularly have consistently failed Black people as would-be allies with policies of perpetual compromise with the right. And the next aspect is really the anarchistic part. And as Black people in the U.S., especially the descendants of enslaved Africans, we are not seen as true citizens. So this has always required us to organize and think outside of the state. So we've had to practice mutual aid. We've had to form our own voluntary associations and unions. We've had to fight state violence. And again, examples can be things like what's happening now with COVID. We can think about Hurricane Katrina. We can look at the survival programs of the Black Panther Party. And you know, it's always only ever been this way. So based on that realization, we arrive at anarchism as a set of principles Black people could certainly be potentially primed for based on our experience as Black people. As a set of politics, it can be something that can help us reject oppression. So in a sense, it really exposes this really basic retort that we're talking about here, where you hear people saying anarchism doesn't work. And you know, that's kind of, it doesn't make sense because anarchism is working every day. People are practicing mutual aid now. People are practicing direct democracy now. And, you know, thinking past states as a solution all the time. And, you know, without calling it anarchism, which is just a name, you know, that doesn't mean to go around labeling anarchism on everything that may align with it. It's just to say that it's not required to call yourself an anarchist to address the issues at hand. Well, and so, well, you know, really we're just saying that the radical politics are necessary in a neo-fascist moment like the one we're in the U.S.
David writes, it depends on the anarchist. Some just want to live their lives and be left alone. Others want to destroy everything around them. It is the second group that causes problems. Rick also wrote on Facebook, anarchists are anti-constitution that makes them an enemy of the United States. Kim, how do you respond to that?
Oh, geez. I mean, in a way, he's right. You know, the Constitution is not something that an anarchist really respects because it's the signifier of the state. I mean, it was written by a bunch of slave-owning white men a couple hundred years ago. It has never allowed for the humanity or dignity of every person. It was created to protect the rights of the landowning white male owning class, and everyone else was kind of SOL. And that's sort of the same position we're in now, hundreds of years later. But in terms of, you know, some anarchists just want to destroy everything and, you know, cause chaos. I believe that this person probably does not know very many anarchists. I would say that, you know, I believe in a diversity of tactics. I'm not going to condemn or judge an individual for partaking whatever actions they deem necessary, you know, during this particular climate. But it's just not the whole deal. I'm sure one of my other panelists will lay it out much more eloquently.
Let's take another voicemail from a listener. This is Dick from Maryland.
Not clear to me how you present two sides to anarchy. I think in any civilized country, anarchy means people who are attempting to overthrow or believe that the current government should be disabled. So I think it should be dealt with very firmly.
Ruth, I want you to come back in here with that historical perspective again and give us some context, because Dick, you know, has a very specific view of anarchy, but can you give us a little more context of what this has looked like historically?
Well, it's interesting, the point about, you know, wanting to overthrow government, because one of the key, historical markers of anarchism in America actually came in 1886 when workers were fighting for the 8-hour day. So actually one of the things that you find about anarchists is that often they share the same values as as liberals and Republicans, who are also, let's face it, revolutionary against absolutism, but who don't understand why liberals and Republicans want to institutionalise power in the way that they have done. So often what happens is that you find that anarchists are fighting for workers' rights or against racism, or, you know, they're struggling in the same frameworks as liberals and Republicans and Democrats. And what they find is that they're met, their reasonable requests are met with repression, with violence, with systematic violence, which is held in monopolies by states. And then that tends to sort of kick off a cycle of aggression and violence. But, you know, so it plays into the stereotype of the anarchist, if you like. But the anarchist is the person who's trying to struggle usually for justice and on the terms of the agreements that liberals and Republicans and Democrats say that they respect and uphold.
Well, on that note, let's take another quick break. We'll hear more about anarchism right after this. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Swell. Swell is a place for thoughtful audio conversations that are unlike anything you've experienced. Interact with authors, celebrity chefs, teachers, artists, CEOs, or connect with new people from all over the world. Listen on Swell for fresh ideas and perspectives. And once you're comfortable with the app, start a new conversation by posting a Swell of your own. Swell is free in the App Store and on Google Play. From technologists to podcasters, interesting people are talking on Swell.
Billie Holiday helped shape American music with her voice and unique style.
But her legacy extends way beyond music, with one song in particular.
How Strange Fruit became an unexpected hit and brought on serious consequences for Billie Holiday.
Listen now to the Throughline podcast from NPR.
This is 1A. And we're continuing our conversation about what anarchism is and what it entails. Kim, we got this question from someone who asks, so do anarchists vote? And if yes, who will they vote for this election? Do anarchists vote?
I would say by and large, no. Some individuals, particularly this year, might have made the decision to do so as a sort of harm reduction technique, which is their right to do, well, unless the state has taken it from them, which is very much so the case in many instances. But, you know, voting, it's just not really part of the deal, because anarchists don't believe in this sort of allegedly representative form of democracy that the state hinges upon. We believe in direct democracy, in which every person's voice matters. In the current setup we have in the U.S., a few people's voice matters, and they actively work to suppress the voices of everyone else. So the short of it is anarchists don't really vote, and they certainly will not be voting for Donald Trump. That I can say with complete certainty.
William, I'm curious, what kinds of conversations have you been having with fellow anarchists about voting?
I mean, to be honest, this question kind of bothers me a little bit, because the president hasn't even agreed to transfer power, and liberal politics have put Black people like myself in a position where the supposed option, the lesser evil, is, a self-proclaimed top cop prosecutor and an architect of, the prison state. So this is following a monumentally large movement against state-sanctioned police violence. And so questions about individuals voting really distract from a big, important question that voting can't answer. And that's, what are we going to do to move past the racist electoral college voting system that's rooted in slavery? What are we going to do to address a system where the popular vote is completely discounted? What are we going to do to get past a system that gives you two options, which both support fracking, increase funding for the police, amid austerity and, you know, capitalistic onslaught, as well as U.S. imperialism? What are we going to do to address those questions? Because you don't vote fascism out. How are we going to deal with those things?
Ruth, as you think about the way anarchy is being discussed in the U.S., and we've just got a few seconds here, I mean, what do you think are the biggest hurdles for anarchy in convincing people that it's a viable option?
I think actually that the attempt to demonize people who have reasonable claims against government, and who, you know, as we've heard from the other panelists, who are sick of the injustices, you know, for them to be demonized as anarchist seems to me to be an obvious sort of political strategy, and that anybody who sees it for what it is should be able to call it out. I mean, the obstacle to anarchy is for people to have the self-confidence to make decisions with other people consensually and for causes of justice.
That's Ruth Kenna, a professor of political theory at Loughborough University and author of The Beginner's Guide to Anarchism and the Government of No One. Also with us, Kim Kelly, a freelance journalist and labor organizer, and William C. Anderson, an activist and co-author of As Black as Resistance. His upcoming book is Nation on No Map. Thanks to you all for being here. This conversation was produced by Michelle Harvin, and our podcast is produced by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks so much for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.